welcome to Slow Rise, talks with bakers that could go on all night long. Here's your host, Mitch Stamm. Oh, hi. This isn't Mitch, actually. This is Mark Dick. I'm the host of another podcast called Rise Up, and I'm actually the first guest on this show. So here's the thing. Mitch Stamm is the executive director of the Bread Bakers Guild of America, and he wanted to experiment with podcasting for the guild and invited me to be the first guest that he talked to, which, you know, is quite the honor, I have to say. And as a favor to Mitch, I said, well, I've done a few podcasts, why don't I put the show together? I'll edit the audio and that kind of stuff. And realized we didn't have an intro for the show, so I made this up. So I think in future episodes, it's probably going to sound a little different, but let's try this to start. So here we go, the first episode of Slow Rise with Mitch and with me. The next voice you hear is Mitch.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mitch Stamm here today for the Bread Bakers Guild of America. I'm speaking with Mark Dick, the creator of the podcast Rise Up. It's a podcast just for bakers. You can find it at riseuppod.com. And he's also the founder of bakersforbakers.org. I'm reversing roles with Mark today to learn more about the fantastic podcast he makes and to learn more about the man behind the curtain. Mark, can we just call it Slow Rise with Mark Dick and the Guild today?
There you go. That'll work.
Okay. You know, I really enjoyed reading your bio and learning about you, and I hope you'll share with Guild members and your friends and family your story, how you went from your career in telecom, your corporate career, and you built an Alan Scott oven, and all of a sudden you were in Orange Boot Bakery. I know it wasn't all of a sudden, but can you tell us about life before Rise Up and Bakers for Bakers?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, you nailed it right there. Like when I graduated high school and I'm getting into university, my dad and my mom said, you know, here's the path forward. You get it yourself a degree. Like my dad was an auto mechanic and he was like, you don't want to be twisting wrenches your whole life. So get yourself a degree, find a government job, keep your head down, get a pension. That was the, go up the organization, but not too high and then get a pension. And so I did, you know, and I got a degree in computer science, and one of the first co-op terms I ever started was at SaskTel. And I just kind of stayed through university and then after university, and ended up working there like 24 years.
Wow.
But by the mid 90s, even like 10 years in, you know, I was married and I had little kids, and my wife was saying, you know, you're not really happy doing what you're doing. But I felt this pressure to keep getting the paycheck, you know. Direct deposit is a evil thing, because once it starts going in, you just have to keep getting it. And
right.
So it's like a drug. But eventually I got more and more frustrated, more and more kind of unhappy, and I got this idea about baking, and I think it was the Bread Builder's book, I'm sure of it, like Alan mm-hmm. Scott's book, and this picture that he painted of a micro bakery, and you're just going to serve this little community, and you're going to make your living, and you're going to use the heat in the oven to heat your own food and that kind of thing, which, you know, was romantic as hell, but just not, you know, when you've got two kids in school and you're living this kind of middle-class life, like that's not on. But I kept dreaming, and we kept talking about it. And by 2004, we had talked about it enough that it was like, they were doing a workshop in Carameas, BC. Alan was, and we packed up the kids, the family, and we went for our summer vacation out to Carameas. And for a week, I helped build a cob oven with Kiko Denzer, and then we did the brick oven with Alan, while Cindy and our two little kids kept driving every day over to Penticton to have fun with the kids. And, you know, Cindy was miserable, but we did the workshop. She was miserable because she thought we were staying in a campground, and we were actually just like in a, you know, on a piece of grass at this farm where we were building the oven. And that wasn't her idea of a vacation at all. But so I learned how to build it with Alan in 2004. By 2006, I'd built my own. Well, Cindy and I built it in our backyard. It took about a year to finally build this thing, and we built it. And I had gone part-time at work. So I had all my Fridays off. And so I started baking for friends and family and the school teachers and co-workers at Sastel, like every Friday. That's what I did, and did that for about a year. But even then, we always had this dream that there was going to be a bakery, like an actual, what I called a proper bakery at the end. And so the year that I baked on Fridays was like a test marketing thing, and people liked what I was doing. I didn't know what I was doing, but people liked it. And we said, okay, there was actually a bakery came up for sale, three blocks from us, and we didn't buy it. Like it was, had been around for like 50 years and we didn't buy it, but we thought about it pretty hard. And then Cindy said, well, if we're going to really do this, you should probably learn what you're doing. And so I did another year's summer vacation or winter vacation in that case. And I went to San Francisco, and I went to SFBI in 2008 and spent 3 weeks there when it was 40 below back home. And I was in San Francisco. I'm still paying for that one too, but I learned enough of the craft to get more confidence. Like, what do you learn? Like, you know, what do you learn in 3 weeks? But it was a 3 week intensive. And then we felt like, okay, we're going to open up a place. And so we just kept looking for spaces in town. And finally, it was like 2 years later, it was 2010 when we finally found a place that was for lease, like an old convenience store that we took over, and it was just an empty shell, and we built a bakery out of it, you know, and that was Orange Boot Bakery. And we opened was January 2011. I got the keys in like November 11th. I remember we walked in the first time, it was Remembrance Day 2010, and we were open by the 18th of January. It was that quick. And it was just Cindy and I, and my friend Marty, who is an electrician for my daughter's hockey team. Oh. And he knew a plumber and he knew a cabinet guy, and we just went for it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was, you know, did the line of credit on home equity.
Oh boy.
and financed a bakery.
Now, would you advise that to anyone listening?
Hell no. The only way we could have done it with that speed was to, you know, put the house up, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But it was a huge stressor. Like it was probably it was the biggest stressor of the whole time that we had Orange Boot, was that my family's future on the line. Like all those stories about keep your head down and, you know, provide for your family and stuff. Like we did the opposite. And that was a big stress. Yeah.
I'm sure it was, because I know two words that I hear from you a lot are family and community.
Oh gosh.
And,
yeah.
And
yeah.
I know that's in your core of everything. So I can imagine the angst involved with placing your home, your shelter, your family's shelter, basically. Yeah.
Because the money stress was taking my eye off the community side. Right. You know, like when especially doing retail, right? Like when, a blizzard hits in the middle of winter and are people going to come to the store and that kind of stuff. And you're just like, it becomes, it's not a fun relationship to have with people where you're like looking out the window, like, where are you?
Baking on speculation is risky.
Oh, it's the worst. Yeah. It was so bad. So
where did the name Orange Boot Bakery come from?
Oh, great. Yeah. Great question. Well, two things. I named it after Dennis Bergkamp, who is a famous soccer player, plays for the Dutch national team, or played for the national team. And I was just a huge fan. And so the Dutch colors are orange. The national team's colors are orange. And so we were tossing around names, and orange boot sounded pretty good. So we went with, and we could get the website. So we went with that. But the meaning from a bakery perspective is, even then I didn't want our place to be this super serious place. So I didn't want a French name that nobody could pronounce. I didn't want, you know, Staff of Life or Waving Wheat or that kind of thing. Cause we wanted to be a fun place. And so we just wanted a name that everyone could spell and pronounce and tell their friends about. And then I had this angle with soccer. So, became Orange Boot.
And also the logo is very expressive. The baker with his arm up extended it's a power. Power image. And,
that's actually my son, the picture we had is, it's my son at like age 8, you know, when kids are wearing capes and stuff. Right. So it's sort of like he's wearing rubber boots and the logo, but I said, I wanted a, you know, like the little kids playing with swords and we had another logo that my buddy Fred that drew it never quite got it where we wanted it, but it was a young girl with a ponytail and a skirt and also, you know, thrusting a different baguette, and it didn't look quite right. So we went with two logos on a lot of things, but then stuck with the boy, and I still use that.
Oh, I love it. And thank you for the sticker. I was so happy to get that. Yeah.
Yeah, I got accused of ripping off Hamilton, but I came first.
Yeah, try to win that one in court.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a buddy of mine said, you based your logo off Hamilton. And I said, no, I didn't.
So do you see yourself ever going back into baking as a professional, like maybe having a little cottage business or doing something like that and actually getting flour on your shoes again?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah, it's... not anymore. Like when we closed Orange Boot in 2015, I moped around for a bit, and then we decided to fire up the oven again. Cindy hit me and she's like, "You're moping around, fire up the oven, email some people, start baking again." And so I did it 2 days a week for 3 years after we closed the retail bakery but I got rid of my stressor about baking on spec. Everything was pre-ordered. Like they had till Wednesday to order and come pick up Friday kind of a thing.
It's a beautiful model.
And it was the best. It was for me personally, that was the best thing because I never had leftovers and I was awake enough to say hi to everybody in chat and stuff. And so it was good. But now that we've moved out to the coast and I'm in an apartment, I probably wouldn't do my own thing again, but I've been up a couple times to see Martin Barnett up in Ladysmith and bake with him. And there's a young couple that have a place within walking distance of our place, and Adam and Jess, and they've just opened and they knew the bakery in Regina. That was actually, they said that when I told them we used to own Orange Boot, they were like, "Oh my God, like we used to come in and stuff." And so he said a few times, like, if I ever feel like shaping, if I ever feel like just getting around the bench, once COVID's done and you can do it a little bit more illegally. So I can see myself being up there because I love the craft. I love flour on the shoes. I like working in bulk, baking. Baking two loaves in your apartment. Ugh, it's not the same.
It's not as fulfilling. I don't get the same rush. The dough's not the same. But, you know, people that haven't baked on a large scale, that is their fulfillment.
So. Yeah. When I downsized and went back to the backyard, and so now I'm doing like a tub of dough at a time, or like 16 loaves in a batch because that's what fit the oven. That has a nice size. Like that, I like to do 4 or 5 bakes, 16 loaves each. Nothing wrong with that. That's a fun day, you know.
It is.
So yeah, and so I definitely miss that. As much as I love the climate out here and it's a new city and a new adventure. Yeah, I miss that a lot. Sure.
Yeah. Can you, it's my dream to one day, just after all the COVID restrictions are down, to just stop by a bakery for an hour and hang out on the bench with people.
Yeah.
No responsibility and shaping bread.
Or even what Jim Williams did up with his barn in Vermont. Like he's my hero from that perspective. Like that's, he's got more guts than I do to actually retrofit a barn like that. But I'm just thinking that's pretty cool.
Well, you know, his story is interesting too, because at first he scaled up.
Yeah.
And like everybody wanted to scale up and up and up, and then he scaled down.
Yeah, totally.
And he's a lot happier.
Yeah. Yeah. And his bread looks great. So,
it's amazing. So can you take us from Rise Up, not from Rise Up, but from closing Orange Boot to starting Rise Up? You said that you spent 3 years baking two or three times a week. And how did this idea foment, and how did it actually happen?
Sure. No, thanks. Great question. I had the idea of the podcast, I think, even when I still had Orange Boot Bakery, because it's because of the guild, plain and simple. Like, I love being a member of the guild, and I always have. You know, I joined in 2008, because I think I learned about it when I was in San Francisco. But the guild hall gatherings and the sitting around shooting the breeze with other bakers, I've been to a lot of classes when we used to travel and stuff. Whenever there was one in Canada, I went. But I've been to Wheatstock twice, and I've been to Seattle and Austin and that kind of thing for different classes. And those weekends are so much fun, and like you learn a ton. But it's just so much fun. And I always thought, like, well, first off, bakers are super generous, and they tell, like, we tell great stories and stuff. And I thought, well, this would be really, more people need to hear these stories. It's tough to get to a class. So why don't we share these stories? And, you know, when you're working around the bench at night, you can listen to other baker stories and make you feel good, make you feel like you're not alone. And so I kind of had this idea that a podcast would be fun. And then in the dark period between closing the bakery and figuring out what I was going to do next, well, I was already baking out of the backyard, but I signed up for a program called the Alt MBA. And it's a leadership and sort of leadership and development program. It's like a month long, and it's super hard work. And it's something I was aware of and I wanted to do for quite a while. And it's got nothing to do with baking. And I was like the second baker to have ever signed up for this program. But the project that I worked on in that program, one of the projects was the podcast. Actually, I had three projects when I went in that I said I wanted to do. I want to do a podcast. I want to write a book. And I want to teach. I want to do some sort of online courses. And so I did I'm doing the podcast. The book's still an idea. But the teaching shifted from teaching to having the community that we can talk about later, like the Bakers for Bakers. But back in 2018, that was sort of these are the three things I want to put into the world. But the podcast was all about sharing stories. And I was feeling down when I first started it, because I kind of thought, if I talk to enough bakers, I will figure out where I went wrong with Orange Boot Bakery. Right. Like, because we closed it, and I felt for a long time like that was a failure, that I had failed because we closed the bakery. I don't feel like that anymore, but that was part of it. It's sort of like I will share all of my stressors and all of the things that I did wrong and all of that stuff. And other bakers, through talking with them, will fix me. that was sort of at the back of my mind. And then I wanted to elevate my friends. I wanted to, like, literally rise them up, like these great people that I had met through the guild and through all the bakers I had met. I wanted to share their stories and kind of have more people hear them, you know. And I thought that their own customers would get a kick out of that, you know. And I don't know if that's the reality, but I kind of thought, you know, the first guest on my show was my good friend Tracy Mussolini, and she said, and I thought, you know, nobody, none of her customers, they don't kind of really know Tracy, because she's always in the back working. And so if you share this podcast, her customers will kind of know a bit about her, you know. And I don't know if that's really happened, but that was one of those ideas that was kind of percolating, one of the reasons.
Well, you've had 121 podcasts.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Now, I want to address that in a minute, but you said something that if it's not too personal, will you share it? You said that you originally considered closing the bakery a failure, but now you don't view it that way.
Yeah.
Will you talk about how you view it now?
Oh, sure. Sure. Like, you know, well, we closed because we got an offer to buy us out, right? Like we got an offer to buy all the gear and we could just one check, here's a check, walk away and they'll take over the lease and the whole thing. And we knew we had to fix things at the bakery because we were selling good, we were making money, but Cindy and I were exhausted and we couldn't figure out a way to not work full shifts and run the business. So two people make full shifts running the business. We said we have to figure this out. And so our plan was we were going to sit down with our staff in January. If we could make it till Christmas, we'll sit down and figure it out and we'll figure out a new way of carving up the work and delegating or something. And so then, but then we got this offer to buy us out and we took it. And then we realized how important the bakery was to people because there were a lot of very, very sad people in our neighborhood when we closed that last day. I'll never forget it. Just a lot of tears and a lot of tears from people that we had told and a lot of tears from people that couldn't figure out what the fuss was about on that last day. We said, well, because we're closing today. Mm. And so our customers were not ready for there to be no bakery, right?
Well, you had built a community, not just
totally.
A bakery.
Oh, yeah.
A community. That's what you're known for.
Totally. Absolutely. And I realized it and I knew it would be hard. I didn't know it would be that hard.
Mm.
And so then for a long time, I was like, oh, if I were smarter, I would have figured this out in a way that we could have kept going. And it's not a smarter thing. So to answer your question, Mitch, what I learned was for me, it's not enough for me to be just in the back making bread. I've got to be out with the customers and I'm there for them. And the whole time we ran the bakery, I wasn't sure if I was the business owner or the baker. And should I be focusing on getting better at my craft or should I be out with customers? And that not deciding what I was going to be just made my crew crazy and made me crazy, you know, and all of that. And so that's why, like, so for me, the downsized version that I did afterwards where I could talk to everybody and stuff for me was perfect. Not for everybody, but for me was perfect. And just being comfortable to say that doing it this way, because that's what's best for me. That's the best balance for me. People don't talk like that enough. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, they have this idea that like, you got to have a retail bakery and you've got to be open six or seven days a week. And then you're supposed to want to have two stores after that. And then you're supposed to want to have three. And then you're up the Eastern Seaboard or all that crap. And it just wasn't it for me. But it took a long time to accept that and that it was okay that, which is another bit of my own, what I get out of doing the podcast is you talk to so many people doing it so many different ways and they're happy with that, whatever it happens to be. There isn't I used to always ask them what's next for you, right? And then enough people said, well, maybe just this, you know, and that's okay. And so that's how I got more comfortable with it, you know.
Great. Well, let's go back to those 121 podcasts because that's monumental. And congratulations.
well, thanks.
Because I thought I was the world's biggest bakery groupie. You put me to shame. I mean, all I want to do is hang out with bakers, watch bakers, talk to bakers, learn from bakers. You figured it out. You're my cultural and intellectual superior on that level. How do you do that? I have a bunch of questions about podcast. One is from the time you contact the subject or from the time you and the subject do the actual interview, like we are, how long does that take you to get to the finished product?
Oh, good question. Well, because So because the show is conversational, it's just the two of us talking, right? It takes me probably, I'm going to say an hour and a half after we talk to go back over the audio file. And if there's internet glitches, kind of cut them out and, you know, trim the ham on both ends, right? Like kind of take the beginning and the end and stuff. But I usually just kind of let the conversation go. Sometimes folks will get back to me and say, you know, I mentioned something I'm not really comfortable with talking about, so I'll cut that out, you know. But
you know, with that, with the two of us, the ham is in the middle. And
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's good. Yeah, and so there's that. And then the way I do the show is I record a bit of an intro at the start where I'll tell a story about what's going on with me. And because sometimes the conversation's 3 weeks ago that I had, but so, you know, and when I'm on my game, I try and have three or four in advance so that people get a show every Wednesday morning.
And that was my next question.
Yeah. In my mind, it's a weekly show, gosh darn it. So I'm going to have a show every week. And so then I'll record the intro, and my daughter did this crazy ukulele music when we first started. So I put that in and then upload the thing. So I'm going to say I'm going to say 3 to 4 hours of effort into every show. That's probably a little high. I'll say 3 hours into every show. And then the work for me is sending out invitations to people.
And as I learned today, getting ready for you, there's some research involved too.
Yeah. Sometimes I need to do more research than I do, but I do a bit of research in advance to try and get a sense of what am I curious about. This year especially, I'm really focused on just trying to have good conversations and try and make a connection with the person that I'm talking to. And so I'll have some conversation starter ideas, some things that I'd like to learn about this person, and then just kind of let it go where it goes, you know.
Do you have difficulty contacting people, or some people hold out or decline the invitation? They just don't want to participate.
Some do, very few. We don't do the show for a number of reasons. Very seldom, but it is there. I'm just too shy. Don't want to be in the public spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
Much more often, it's I'm too busy, and literally too busy to even contemplate scheduling an hour for a talk. Right? Like,
wow.
And folks are just really, really kind of scattered that way. So I've learned when I don't hear back from people not to take it personally, you know, because folks are just busy. And like Cindy keeps saying, when we had the bakery, if I got an email like that, it might be 3 weeks before I reply because I'm doing a bunch of other stuff, right? And so, okay.
So you're constantly on the lookout for more candidates.
What I started doing this year, well, I built myself a bit of a pipeline. So I actually have like, you know, here's all the people I want to talk to. Here's who I've invited, and kind of work people through because it keeps me more organized. But the show's got enough kind of critical mass now where people are reaching out to me saying, you should talk to these folks.
Yeah.
And this is bakers for you. Nobody says, you should talk to me. I'm interesting. They say, you know what? You should talk to this guy over here. He's got a really good story. I would love to hear it. And that's, again, the generosity and the humbleness of bakers, which is funny. But when I started, and I haven't done even my whole list of people I want to talk to yet, but I had a bit of a hit list, right? Like I wanted to talk to you. I wanted to talk to Jeffrey Hamelman. I still want to talk to Didier one day. I'll get up the guts to invite him. I wanted to talk to all the people that I kind of met on all of these guild courses and stuff, and big and small, and I'm using air quotes there. You know, there's the people that teach the course or run the guild or serve on the board and stuff, and then there are just the folks that I was beside on the bench, and I find them all equally interesting. And so that's a, you know, because I I've met a lot of folks that way. And so I want to make sure I talk to them all. But now I'm also finding, like, cause I'm on Instagram and just all of the people popping up there and then pointing, then that's, I get a lot of referrals where people send me a message on Instagram saying you should talk to this other person. And then, and now with Bakers for Bakers, it's, you know, interesting people sign up for that. And I go, oh, huh, who are you? I'd like to meet you. And so Peter Claybaker early on said, like, how are you going to do a weekly show? You're going to run out of people to talk to. And it's like, I have more people still to talk to than I've talked to already. Like, it's just endless, you know?
That's great. It's almost like the 6 degrees of Didier Rosada in a way, oh, you know, from baker to baker to baker.
But that was a theme in the early shows. I wanted to know who everyone's teacher was. Like, are you from the Didier school, or did you go off on this, learn from this other direction? Because right. It all goes back to the same 6 people, especially in North America.
Yes.
As I've gone further afield. And I also want to make it even more global. Like, I've talked to folks in the UK and in Lebanon and in, Puerto Rico coming up, and Australia, a couple folks. And as I want to make it more global, but like, it's just endless, even in North America too. It's, you know, I'm going to get tired of it long before I've talked to everybody.
Well, you know, that it is true. The bakeries are just popping up all over, large and small. The small bakeries, and now with the subscription sales and the market sales and the, it's a great time for the small bakers.
Well, and good product too, right? Like when I think of the stuff I made in 2008, and oh my God, like I still have some pictures that I should really destroy for ransom purposes, but of my early bakes.
Well, everybody's more educated on both sides of the bench now, the consumer and the baker.
Totally.
The exchange of information is free.
Yeah. And it's, and yet watching someone who's very skilled do what they're best at is a whole other level too. Like, I haven't taken one of the new Zoom classes that you're doing, but I certainly can vouch for it from the face-to-face perspective. There's nothing better than looking in someone else's mixer from a learning process perspective.
So that brings me to a question. Do you have a mission statement for Rise Up? Or if not, what is your mission? Is it telling stories? Is it getting bakers more known, sharing? What, it's all those, I know, but how do you see it?
No, the real mission now is conversations with interesting people that I can share with other bakers, you know? So I'm talking with a show that's coming up in a couple of weeks, or might already be out, is with a couple of women in Colorado that run a pizza restaurant that started up because they were serious mountain bikers and they just thought their town needed better food. And it was like, when I heard this story, I was like, oh, okay, well, we got to talk, you know, pizza's close enough for me. Right. So, and there's lessons there. So right now it's like, I have an audience. I have a group of people that like the show, and I just want to, my mission now is to bring them interesting conversation, stuff that they'll enjoy listening to. And that's good enough. You know, that's.
You know, the classes are great, but it's not the recipes or the technique so important. It's the voice and message of the instructor, whether it's on Zoom, hands-on, mm-hmm. or just across the bench.
Yep.
You pick up, it's about life. The lessons in bread are a total metaphor for the lessons in life. And you just exchange that information freely.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. And with these conversations, with all these folks that are running small businesses, you know, and even like, you know, a guy with like Dan Leader in the global scheme of things was running a small business when he was running bread alone. For us, it's like this monstrous thing, but you know, they're running these businesses and it's like life. It's like the same question you're asking me, why are you doing this? what's your mission? That's why I'm asking these other folks. And I don't think you can say it too many times. I don't think you can hear it too many times. Even if it sounds on one level the same, it's unique to each person. And so when you tell me about your bakery, you're telling me about yourself. And that's a beautiful gift to share, right?
And it's probably more flowing than if they were to talk about themselves. You know, if describe yourself, talk about your baking, and they get into the whole sourcing and ingredients and nature. And
One of these days, I'm going to have to start doing a video version of this show, because sometimes when we're on Zoom like this, the person I'm talking to is in their bakery, and right away it's like, oh, what's that behind you? And then we spend some time that sounds terrible, but they start moving the camera around and they want to show off their space. And I love seeing it. You know, I love it. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny. The conversations at the bench are some of the most stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
They just pour out and it can cover everything. Last summer, the summer before COVID, I call everything BC now, before COVID. I got to spend a morning on the bench at King Arthur. I was up there for a meeting, but they said, hop on the bench.
Yeah.
Jeffrey stopped in, you know, after his retirement.
Uh-huh.
And the conversation at the bench was, what if, have you noticed? What if we try this? It was just a spiritual event.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was really great relating with him. The conversations at the bench, and especially as you were referring to earlier, in the middle of the night, the people you bond with over the bench in midnight hours are people that will always be in your life, probably, or at least in your heart.
Oh, yeah. Oh, very much so. Very much so.
So right now, what takes more of your time, or is it equally balanced between Bakers for Bakers and Rise Up? How do you spend your time?
Well, I spend, I am not as active on Bakers for Bakers as I need to be. That's certainly something right now that needs more of my attention. Just if I want to do more things for the folks there. I did a member survey last month, and I've read the results, and I have not collated and reacted and responded to it yet. And so there's things I need to do there. But and everything, like both Rise Up and Bakers for Bakers, is kind of, it's volunteer supported, as you know, right? So it's just like, if you're getting value and you want to donate, this would be great. And it helps me keep it running. But so I'm doing other work to pay my own rent and that kind of thing. This is a passion project for now, for sure. I'd love for one day there to be, you know, a way that I could do it, you know, for my income, but I'm more worried about understanding what people need right now more than anything else. But, so I make sure I get the podcast out. I stay on top of things and keep the site running at Bakers for Bakers. And if there's a conversation that gets me interested, I'll chime in. But the conversation there is kind of, after a year, is kind of flowing in and of itself now. People are more willing to ask. People are always generous and sharing what they know. And so it works, you know. What I'm most interested with Bakers for Bakers, and the whole reason I started it was I wanted a place where we could talk about the business of baking more so than the craft of baking. Although when I set up the forums, I set up both sections, and the craft gets an awful lot of traction. People want, you know, are sharing pictures of croissants that are blowing out and what's going on and that kind of thing. But for me, I'm more interested in the business side of things and just sort of how people can make their living on these smaller places, so they don't feel like they have to expand unless they want to expand. I would like a place where we can share information that makes it easier for people to make their living at the size that they want to be, put it that way, and not feel forced into a direction that they don't want to take, but they feel they have to, or else I can't make ends meet. You know, that kind of a thing. That's my holy grail. Right? That's my my real goal here. And so I'm hoping to do some things this year to kind of have some more focused conversations with folks. And I don't know much about it beyond that, what I want to do, but the dream for me is like to say, hey, you know, we're having a get together this Friday at 2:00. It's going to be over Zoom. We're going to talk about this aspect of the business of baking. Maybe it's marketing, maybe it's finding customers, maybe it's finding what's a decent bookkeeper, that kind of thing. And try and get people together and let's talk about that. And let's help people make sense out of that, you know? Yeah.
Well, I have back to the 121 and the success. Would you say you're happy now with Rise Up? Is it fulfilling and happy right now?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's that balance point for me is that I have something that I can work on and get better at. And with me, that's, again, good conversations and trying to get a kind of a more diversity of guests. And by that, I mean, you know, getting out of my own comfort zone a little bit as well. And let's reach out to somebody in Argentina. Let's reach out to somebody in Asia that, you know, that kind of a thing. And learn about them, you know. I think the thing when we're able to meet up again, I think the thing with Rise Up that I would really like to do is to start doing some panel discussions, some, you know, let's get three or four people on a call and we'll have a topic and we'll kind of yak through it and stuff. And that can be a podcast episode. You know, I launched the podcast just after Wheatstock in 2018, but I had some in the can and I really wanted to do a live event in Wheatstock 2018. And I didn't have the guts to ask anybody because I hadn't started yet. And I was still in the, people aren't even going to, they're going to say, what's a podcast. But you know, if we ever did a get together again, I would love to do some sort of live event that we record as a podcast.
You're
to learn
in.
About all of that. Right. Like it's, that would be
good.
That would be the ultimate. Yeah.
Well, that leads me to a question then. Mm-hmm. When did you realize like, hey, this is really good? I mean, I'm picking up listeners. How far in was it when you said, this is really good? This is working the way I hoped.
Oh, it was fast. Like it didn't take long. The first couple episodes, like I launched the first one and I think I did a post on the Guild forum and I said, hey, I just launched this podcast. Do you want to hear Tracy? She's on the first episode. And like, I think a couple hundred people downloaded that thing. Right. Like, and I was like, right then it was like, oh, I've won. I've gone to heaven. Like 200 people. Oh my God. And now it's like, I don't really look at the numbers much, but there are some episodes that like 1,000 people will download in the first week. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, what the heck is this? So it's already bigger than I ever wanted. I think what, if there's anything more for me from the podcast, like do I want more? It would be, like I said, connecting up it with other events to kind of, you know, do some joint work just because it would be fun. Let's just have some fun.
Yeah.
And if it's an episode for the show, it'll be an episode for the show. I'd like to be good enough as a speaker that I could, you know, get up on stage and if not give a talk, but like, you know, MC a panel discussion or something would be, I think that'd be a stretch for me. So that'd be fun. You know,
it's a lot of fun. And speaking of fun, are you ready for the lightning round?
Okay, sure. Yeah. Fire away.
Short answers. Creamy or chunky peanut butter?
Oh, creamy.
Vanilla?
But all natural.
Oh, you stir that stuff? I can't say. That drives me crazy. Vanilla or chocolate ice cream?
Chocolate.
Milk or dark chocolate?
Ooh, dark, but not too dark.
Favorite style of pizza?
Italian, like Neapolitan.
Neapolitan.
Yeah, thinner crust, yeah.
Two condiments you can't live without?
Yellow mustard and yeah, mustard and ketchup.
Yeah.
Pretty normal.
Good ones. At work, vinyl or latex gloves?
Oh, I guess vinyl.
Yeah, they're much.
Yeah, because all the ones I bought always said no latex. But those nitrile ones, the blue nitrile ones.
Oh, those are the best.
Yeah, those are the best.
Two of your favorite movies.
This is Spinal Tap, for sure. Yeah. That's an oldie. Oh, and I will rewatch anything by Wes Anderson. I'm a Wes Anderson fan.
Yeah,
so let's say Moonrise Kingdom. Yeah.
Yeah, great. Okay, you might not want to answer this one. What was your first alcoholic beverage and how old were you?
Rum and Coke, dark rum and Coke.
Yeah.
And far too young. But I wasn't. let's say 3 years under.
Okay. That's what it takes to get to the right age.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you listen to National Public Radio?
I don't, being Canadian.
Okay. Then here's our last question.
Uh-huh.
If the earth were a giant candy, what would you hope to find at the center? Molten chocolate, warm caramel, or chewy nugget? Chewy nougat.
I'll go for caramel. Surprisingly, but it'd be a little firmer than the chocolate. Yeah.
That's great. Mark, it was great spending time with you. After today, I know a couple of things more. I know that Cindy's in charge and that and that you're happy about that.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
We talked about family and community. Those are your big areas of involvement. But to me, I knew this, but it's just reinforced. You're a cheerleader, an advocate, and a raconteur of bakers, bakery happenings, and everything. And salute you and thank you for doing everything you do to honor the craft, the art, and the science of baking and the people who do it. So thank you so much for joining us today on Slow Rise with Mark Dick.
You betcha. Well, thank you, Mitch. And I will accept all of that, but I'm also going to reflect it right back upon you because you've been a big influence for me.
Thank you.
And I really appreciate everything you've done and are still doing in education and with the Guild and in baking in general.
Thanks. You can edit that out.
Yeah. Not going to do it. Well, that was fun. I had a really good time. I hope Mitch had a good time. Sounded like he did. I'm going to record an outro for this episode, but I never really talked to Mitch about it, and so I'm not sure what he'd like to say. So I'm gonna wing it and see, and he can always change it. So, gosh, it was great to talk to Mark, wasn't it? Sorry, let's not go there. You know, the Guild, even in these COVID times, they're all about education, right? That's why I joined the Bread Bakers Guild in 2008. And, you know, they're still going strong and working hard. They've got members all over the world. So if you're listening to this show and you're thinking, is the Bread Bakers Guild of America something I want to join? Yeah, it probably is. You should join the Guild. And you can sign up at bbga.org. And if you're already a member and you're thinking, oh, COVID, I can't go to classes, I can't go to Wheatstock, what should I do? You should try out their online classes. They're coming up with more and more of them. Every week, it seems, there's a newsletter coming out. So take an online class. They're a lot of fun and you're going to learn a lot and say what you like. Boy, the Guild can get some awesome bakers teaching classes for the Guild. Just amazing folks. So check them out. Read the newsletter that Mitch writes. It's really, really good. Funny as well. Buy some merch. You know, we all need happy t-shirts and there's nothing happier than a Bread Bakers Guild t-shirt or maybe a hat. Or a patch for your chef coat that you can bring out just on Saturdays to feel all warm and fancy in your chef coat. But support the Guild. I support the Guild. I hope you do too. All right, time to end the first episode of Slow Rise. Hope you enjoyed the show. I hope there are more. Until next time, have fun. Happy baking. Bye-bye.